We believe that you are strong by design, and you were made in God's image to have a strong body, mind, and spirit. You're listening to the number one Strength and Health Authority podcast in the world. So let's get ready to unlock your potential and transform your life in today's episode.
Hello and welcome to the Strong by Design podcast. I am Coach Tanya Fines, and I have to say I have been looking forward to doing this podcast for a very long time because I have with me today kind of like my rock star for the health and fitness industry, and it's Mr. Ben Greenfield. And if you haven't heard of him, then I have to assume you're just pretty much newly born, because he's everywhere.
Better things to do with your life.
He is an absolute wealth of knowledge. So I don't want to talk too much. I want to get right into it with you, Ben. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and I see you're clearly on your treadmill and multitasking.
I don't know if I'd consider that multitasking. I think you move while you're talking. We actually know it increases your brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and it's actually it's a pretty good way to kind of keep your mind active. And especially if you're doing like phone calls or interviews, things like that. You know, I think, you know, staying a little active is actually it's better than being sedentary, in my opinion, in terms of mental alertness. You know, provided you're not in an all-out sprint. If I fall off the back of this treadmill and get a concussion, I've proven myself wrong yet again. But that's my logic, and I'm sticking to it.
Cool. So Ben, I could spend an hour just introing you and talking about your background. I mean, you're kind of a self in your book by your own description.
That makes for an easy interview.
But you referred to yourself as a complete nerd, which had me laughing out loud when I read that. But you've done a lot at a really young age, and you've accomplished a lot. But what really stuck out when I was reading your bio and looking at your website, there was a line that it says what you do is to truly, what you want to do is to help people to live truly limitless lives with fully optimized minds, bodies, and spirits. And that really resonated with me, because I think there's so many of us that would actually like that. We have the right intention, and somewhere in the mess of life and all that, we get either distracted or we talk ourselves out of things. But the fact that, I mean, your life has been a testament to this is actually what you're doing. I have mad respect for that.
Well, thanks. Maybe come live with me for a few days and you'll change your mind. Putting away my underwear, cleaning my closet, or making my bed, according to my wife. So.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, I'm a Vancouver girl, so the climate I'm a little more used to than here in Florida. I'm still trying to get used to the humidity down here. So what I want to add, I guess my first question is, you know, all of this stuff that you've done, like it seems like you just came out of the womb at full speed. So, I mean, you clearly, or it appears as though you've always had that kind of really focused, even from a young age. Where do you attribute that to? I mean, would you just say I was just born like that? I mean, were your parents very driven, focused, motivated people? But where does that come from?
Well, I definitely didn't come out of the womb at full speed. As a matter of fact, I think I asked my dad the other day, because I think it's important to occasionally check in with your parents and find out a little bit more about how you as a child operated, because it helps you become more connected to your authentic true self later on in adulthood. I think one of the best things you can do is have conversations with your parents, like, what was I like when I was a boy? Or, you know, why'd you name me? Or what kind of friends I like to hang out with? Or what kind of foods I like to eat? Like that, those kind of conversations help not only keep you young, but also kind of more in touch with who you are, because, you know, to a large extent, your purpose in life, the things that you're naturally skilled at, are things that you probably were naturally skilled at, or at least had a tendency towards enjoying early on in life. And, you know, I think my dad described me as kind of slow. He's like, you know, you weren't like the fastest kid out there. He's like, you weren't the most explosive when you were playing sports. He's like, you weren't fiery, or you didn't have a real go-getter attitude. But he said you would just like, you would stick like white on rice to something until you'd figure it out. Like a huge amount of whatever you want to call it, stubbornness, perseverance, endurance. And that probably still defines me to this day. Like I'm not naturally good at just about anything at all. Like I have to try really hard to be good at probably anything except maybe arguably reading and writing. Like I can read and write pretty well and maybe some music stuff. You know, I feel like maybe I have some natural tendencies towards that. But everything else, like I practice and practice and practice. Like I would, before basketball practice, I would literally just go up by myself and play imaginary games for like 2 hours. Or when I wanted to learn how to throw a spiral in football, I literally threw the football till I had like rotator cuff syndrome against the chicken link fence over and over and over again because I wouldn't quit, wouldn't give up. And so I think a big part of it for me is just stick-to-itiveness. Yeah. And I've always kind of been wired that way. Like I like to learn a skill or learn some or figure out something I might be interested in, and then I'll just go off usually by myself. I don't seem to do as well with mentors or teachers versus like myself and like books or videos or tutorials, and I'll just like practice and practice and practice. And that's kind of what I've always done, you know, with my content, with my business, with my racing, with my health, anything. For me, it's just like a slow build. I come back day after day after day and, you know, shoot for incremental improvements and just, you know, I lay down one new brick every day versus building the house all at once. And that's kind of more how I operate. So, you know, I'm really not full speed explosiveness. I'm kind of a slow build endurance type of guy.
Cool. It sounds like that's a good way to make things stick. Anyways, when you talk about laying things one brick at a time and just repetitiveness and practice, did you ever, in any of the things that you attempt, I know you talk, I mean, you're very open about the fact that all of the things that you write about and talk about, things that you like, don't like, you experiment on yourself. You try everything on you. And you've done a lot. But have you ever found one thing that was particularly like challenging or got you frustrated, like, you know, throwing the football, something that just was extra challenging and kind of had you like, you know, I got to get this.
Oh, where would I even start? I mean, like, well, thing I do every day is hard for me. I would say that, like Spartan racing, when I did that, so I raced for Reebok on a pro Spartan racing contract for 4 years. And like, I didn't know how to climb a rope. I didn't know how to like, you know, carry two sandbags on my shoulders. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have enough hip mobility to get underneath barbed wire. I didn't know how to do the monkey bars properly. Like I couldn't, sorry to use the expression, I could do jack shit. I just had to like practice and practice. I like built obstacles in my backyard and fell off stuff repeatedly, and I'd fall off monkey bars and I'd break open my hands so they were bleeding. And eventually, you know, I learned how to throw a spear properly. Yeah. I learned how to climb a rope by watching YouTube videos and practicing over and over again. And so, yeah, that was kind of hard for me, like physically, just to develop all these skills, because maybe it's because I was homeschooled growing up, so I didn't really grow up on a playground, so I didn't do a lot of monkey bars and pull or climb or anything like that. But that's one thing. You know, probably another would be cooking. You know, I grew up eating junk food and fast food, and, you know, my idea of cooking was pouring the macaroni out of the Kraft macaroni and cheese box, peanut butter Captain Crunch into the bowl, and just learning how to do things like, you know, how to sous vide, how to smoke, how to grill. Right. How to get the proper meat temp, how to identify medium versus medium rare versus rare plus, you know, how to soak, how to sprout, how to ferment. Like just, you know, so many rotten jars of sprouts I've had to throw out and so many overdone pieces of meat, and, you know, just trial and error. But yeah, I mean, again, like, where do I even start? Like unless it's reading or writing or, you know, some music things, I got to practice on everything.
Okay. So I want to actually talk with you and have you actually, I want you to talk about biohacking. And it's interesting because when I knew that I wanted to get, you know, try to get you on the podcast, I had done a little bit of reading about biohacking, not a whole lot. And I kind of have an idea, and I'm in the, I've talked with other people that are like, yeah, you know, I think I know what it is. And they tell me a little bit about it. And I'm like, I don't know. So I want you to talk, like, what is, make it really simple for the rest of us, what is it? What is biohacking?
Well, biohacking technically is just implementing any technique or tactic or strategy that would allow one to either amplify any element of your biology, like increase its concentration or elevate its activity,
right?
Or decrease in some cases, you know, for maybe sleep or napping purposes or something like that, like decrease, you know, excitatory neurotransmitters using a, you know, a headset that emits electrical activity or something like that. So sometimes yeah. you're turning up or turning down signals in the body, typically using some external stimuli, whether it's a gadget or a technology or a pill or a capsule or an implant or anything like that, to accelerate or decelerate a biological function. And in some cases, you're even shortcutting functions, right? Mm-hmm. So we know, for example, that, you know, you got to get around, you know, anywhere from 1 to 2 hours of sunlight exposure to get appreciable amounts of red and near infrared and far infrared light. But then if you like buy a high power light panel, you could achieve the same thing within 10 minutes using a piece of technology. So you're kind of shortcutting some of the benefits you'd get from the full infrared spectrum of sunlight, in that case, by using some kind of technology. Now, that all being said, like, the original biohackers were not what we think of today. These were folks who would technically call their bodies wetware and anything that they would use on the body hardware. So we're talking about people who would like get a compass installed in their chest to vibrate every time you face true north, or magnetic implants underneath the fingertips to interact with screens and technology, kind of like the movie, what's that movie? Minority Report, I think, is the movie where they do a little bit of that. It would involve, you know, like the guy who injected his eyeballs with chlorophyll to get night vision, or the guy who installed a magnetic implant in his ear to be able to enhance his hearing. Mm-hmm. Like, those are kind of like the true people who are literally hacking their biology. And then, you know, we have kind of like the new flavor of biohackers who are kind of sort of doing some of these things. I mean, like, you could say, blending fats with your coffee, or taping over your mouth when you're sleeping for example, increase the amount of compounds from coffee that might enter the brain, or to, you know, make you breathe through your nose while you're asleep. Like, those are more things I consider just to be health tactics, like health strategies, and not necessarily, you know, true biohacking. So as it's grown in popularity, I think the name has been a little bit diluted by mm-hmm. what are, you know, basic health practices. And so the definition now is a little bit tricky. It's a little bit foggy, because in Silicon Valley, you might run into someone who says they're a biohacker and they literally are like doing surgery on themselves, or, you know, getting implants, or, you know, really on the fringes of experimenting with the human body. And then you might run into somebody else who says, yeah, I'm a biohacker, I wear red glasses at night, right? So it really kind of depends
right.
on how far you want to take the definition. And so it's a little tricky now, but that's mm-hmm. kind of a long explanation.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. To help our show reach more listeners just like you, please let us know how we've changed your life by leaving a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Go to strongbydesignpodcast.com. That's strongbydesignpodcast.com. Let's get back to the show.
I suppose technically anybody could be a biohacker or call themselves a biohacker. Like, if I put on my yellow blue blocker lenses, I could say, well, I'm biohacking.
Arguably, or if you think about it the other way, very, very few people should be saying that they're biohackers.
True. And
most people should be saying, like, I take care of my body, I'm into health, like, I have a self-care protocol or a self-love protocol, or I'm really interested in my own fitness or longevity. And sometimes my mind goes to the place that that would be a better approach, just because, again, like, biohacking has just like a very yang, edgy, hard feel to it. And I think sometimes that makes people a little bit nervous, thinking, oh, this is a biohacker. You know, what kind of electrodes do they have shoved up their butt right now while they're talking to me?
Right.
Whereas, you know, I think if we were to really recategorize biohacking into where I think it should be categorized, which is kind of like the fringe skirts of messing around with human biology, mm-hmm. I think that might be a more appropriate place for it. The rest of us, we're just into health.
Right. So I want to mention your book. I got your book Boundless, and it's how long did it take you to write this book?
Oh, well, you know, I wanted to write a book on anti-aging and longevity because yes. I've increasingly become more interested in anti-aging and longevity and like health span and lifespan and looking and feeling and performing really good into age versus just like performance at all costs or, you know, some vain aesthetic right. based, just pure muscle gain or fat loss. And so when I started to write the book, I realized, you know, there are so many biological systems involved with aging, from the immune system to the endocrine system to the musculoskeletal system, you know, the cardiovascular, the nervous system. We could go on and on. But I realized, you know, really to live a long time and feel good doing it, to have, as the name of the book implies, boundless mm. energy, like you really do have to target not only your body and your brain, but even spiritual health. You know, what we've learned from a lot of the blue zones, focusing on things like gratitude and service and relationships and purpose and belief in a higher power or greater meaning in life and, you know, and low amounts of stress. And so it turned out to be just kind of a tome on body, brain, and spirit optimization. It wound up being about 3 years in the works. And when I turned it into the publisher, the manuscript was like 1,300 pages long. So I still had to cut out, you know, about 600 pages of the book, which actually, if you get the book, all the content that got cut, it still exists. Like there's a hidden section of the website that you get access to as part of the book, where yes. you get all the stuff that kind of got cut from the book and a bunch of additional, you know, podcasts and books and resources relevant to each chapter. But to answer your question, yeah, it was about 3 years, you know, myself, couple of research assistants, you know, publishing team, design team, you know, there's a lot that goes into a book like that. And usually what I do is I use Google, of course, is getting thrown under the bus or vilified right now, perhaps in some yeah. cases fairly due to some of its censorship stuff, but I still use Google quite a bit. Switching off of Google so far has not been something I've found incredibly convenient to do, but when I write anything, usually I'll just start a Google Drive, and then I'll have a folder in Google Drive for each chapter, and then I'll have like my research doc, my chapter doc, my people I want to interview doc, and basically like a series of documents for each chapter. And so I just have a giant Google Drive. So, you know, I have like a Google Drive folder for Boundless, and every single chapter, you know, like the brain chapter, the neurotransmitters chapter, the gut chapter, it's got like 6 or 7 documents in it that are my working documents as I'm working through that chapter. And then as each chapter is edited, what happens is, you know, there's like version 1, version 2, version 3, version 4. So you're never kind of like losing old content that you've written.
Right.
And I find that's a pretty good way to write, because then you can also collaborate, right? You can like have a research assistant working on one thing while you're working on another. And so, it was about 3 years of that.
Cool. Well, it's like an encyclopedia university resource. And it's already, mine is filled with highlights and bent pages and stuff like that, and where I want to go back to and reread for certain, because it's just chock full of information. And I love that every chapter has that URL where you can go and get further information. I love that. So it's like the gift that keeps on giving, really.
Well, I wrote it to be more of like a cookbook, you know, like where he's like, don't start at the beginning. Like, go straight to the sleep chapter and just completely turn yourself into a total sleep ninja and learn about, you know, starting your day with large amounts of light exposure, and then the specific pieces of software like Iris to install on your computer, and then the biological LED or the red incandescent bulbs to put in the bedroom, or different ways to cool the body. You know, anything from putting on wool socks before you go to bed to, you know, getting a special pad that circulates 55 degree water under the bed, to the different types of noise like pink noise or white noise or brown noise to help you sleep. You know, there's napping sections in that chapter. And there's, you know, what to do if you don't get high enough deep sleep, what to do if you don't get high enough light sleep, what to do if you, you know, wake up at 2 a.m., what are the herbs that specifically help in that scenario. And so, you know, you go through each chapter, and it just kind of turns you into an expert on that specific topic for that specific chapter. And that's kind of what my vision was when writing it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. This episode is brought to you by MetabolicStretching.net. A revolutionary flow of simple stretches that melt body fat, tone muscles, and leave you feeling full of energy in just 15 minutes. Visit metabolicstretching.net to torch stubborn body fat fast and stretch your way lean. That's metabolicstretching.net.
Going back to, you mentioned spirituality as a part of, you know, a healthy, well body life and lifestyle. And I love that. Now you have a strong faith, and did you grow up in a family with a strong faith? Is that something that has just been with you your whole life, or is it something that kind of grew with you as you really immersed yourself in this whole culture of what you do?
Well, you know, I was born into a Christian family. And so, you know, I grew up going to church, going to Sunday school, reading the Bible, singing hymns, very, very positive and you know, memorable from a pleasurable standpoint, childhood, because my family was really rooted in, you know, in the Ten Commandments and loving others and loving God and helping your neighbor and, you know, singing songs and choosing to be happy and, you know, and gratefulness in all circumstances and all these kind of, you know, wonderful lessons that we can learn from the Bible I grew up with. And I have to say that the deeper and deeper that I delved into physical culture and the pursuit of fitness or performance or the way that your body looks as a route to fulfillment or to feeling good about yourself or happiness, probably for a time, you know, the farther I got away from the importance of caring for, in many cases, the one part of us that's most important but shriveled and shrunk up and neglected inside of us, our soul and our spirit. And, you know, really, it was almost, you know, largely, again, kind of like a selfish pursuit that led me back into the real core importance, the foundational importance of spirituality. You know, when I really began to dive into longevity and anti-aging and, you know, was kind of, looking at a lot of these blue zones, you know, Sardinia and Okinawa and Nicoya and Loma Linda, and they, you know, the percentage of the population that are churchgoers, that have a belief in a higher power, that have a prayer practice and a meditation practice and a gratitude practice and volunteer or serve in their local community and have big family dinners and often large families, you know, and all these things we associate with not just being spiritual, but being religious was pretty staggering. And I realized, geez, I mean, if you're going to really talk about lifespan and health span, you have to also consider the deep spiritual underlying aspects of that. And also, when you look at living a long time through the lens of not living a long time so that you can make the most money or have the most cars or get the biggest house or have the most friends, but instead so that after having identified your core true purpose, you can be around as long as possible to make maximum impact with that purpose in life, whether it's 70 years or 140 years, then, you know, all longevity and anti-aging is about is just equipping yourself to make maximum impact on this planet during the period of time that you're here. And I think that having a high degree of spiritual fitness and engaging in the spiritual disciplines, which we learn about in the writings of you know, authors like Richard Foster and John Piper and John Eldridge, and you know, there's a host of different spiritual disciplines books that I highlight and encourage people to read in Boundless. You know, when you weave all those into your life, not only do you feel the health impact, but you feel the happiness impact and the fulfillment impact. And so, you know, for me, you know, I grew up in a Christian household, but perhaps didn't even realize enough the core foundational importance of having a practice of spiritual disciplines and the deep, deep hope that comes from knowing that there's like a great creator or a great author who has a plan for your life. You know, I didn't really appreciate the importance of that until like my mid 30s. You know, I'm 38 now. And so, you know, it's kind of been an interesting zigzagging journey from, you know, really, you know, loving God and being immersed in the church as I was a kid to kind of getting more into, you know, choosing myself, forming my own path. I can do this. I got the ego. I got the fitness. I can crush life on my own. Back to, holy cow, not only can I not do anything without the power of God in my life, but anything I do is not fulfilling unless I have that deep hope and also the confidence that, you know, I'm making a difference on the planet by loving God and loving others with the purpose that I've been blessed with in life.
Beautiful. I love that. So do you feel, or do you believe that every single one of us, like having that purpose, there's a purpose, there's something that each of us is capable, and I'll say equipped through life experience to leave, to teach, to share, and that it's almost a responsibility?
So in short, yes. I just wrote an article at bengreenfieldfitness.com on how to find your purpose in life. And I alluded to that earlier, you know, looking into the things that you really liked to do when you were a kid, the things that put you in the zone or make time go by very quickly for you now. The things that even come easy to you. You don't have to feel guilty if teaching comes easy to you, or if engineering comes easy to you, or if building or crafting comes easy to you, because that's an indicator that that's kind of like the hole that you fit into really, really well, and that you're naturally blessed towards. That doesn't mean that work doesn't always feel like work. Some people feel that, you know, to be fully self-actualized, work should always feel like play. And sometimes, you know, even though I know that one of my core skills that I'm actually pretty good at is writing still feels like work sometimes. Yeah. But man, if you put a blank page in front of me and walk away and tell me what to write about, you know, I'll write for 2 hours and think 15 minutes has gone by, because I immediately get into the zone. Whereas my wife is more of an artist or a craftsperson. So you put her in front of a blank page and she will literally start crying after 5 minutes. She doesn't know what to do, but you hand her a paintbrush and an easel and a canvas, and she'll make beautiful art for hours on end. And so when we weave all this together, what did you like to do when you were a kid? What makes time go by quickly for you now? What comes easy to you? You can then begin to form an actual purpose statement based around that. And that's something that I teach you how to do in detail in the book. But ultimately, it should be one single, succinct statement that you have memorized. That's kind of your why. You know, when things are stressful, or you feel like sleeping in more than you probably should, or you're feeling a little bit depressed, or you're looking for direction in life, whether it be a new career or a relationship or a change in your current career and the way that you operate in that, then you can just close your eyes and think of, or even say aloud, your purpose statement, and it fuels your fire and gives you great clarity and direction. And it can change. My purpose statement up until a couple of years ago was to empower people to live a more adventurous, joyful, and fulfilling life. Mm-hmm. To empower people to live a more adventurous, joyful, and fulfilling life. And that's what I really based a lot of what I did around. You know, the supplements company that I started called Keon, we're developing, you know, this whole suite of supplements that help people go out and take their next step in life. And it was all based around that purpose statement. And, you know, and it was during my athletic career when I was out doing a lot of hard things, I wanted to inspire people and get people out there to live their own adventure, that purpose statement really fueled me. And as I've begun to dial back on athleticism and kind of all these masochistic events I've been traveling around the world doing for the past 20 years, I've changed my purpose statement. And my purpose statement is now to read, write, learn, teach, sing, speak, compete, and create in full presence and selfless love to the glory of God. And so that's now my purpose statement. You can hear that one's a little different, right? Like, it weaves in 8 things that I know I'm good at or that I like to do, and then positions those in a way that allows me to love God, love others, and be present. And so I realized, like, those are all things that are super important to me and will allow me at this point in my life to make maximum impact. And so, you know, that's written down. Sometimes I'll make coffee mugs that I drink my coffee out of that have my purpose statement on them, or put a screensaver on my computer with my purpose statement, or make a little, you know, go to a website like Zazzle and make a little wall. And so, it's incredibly important. And I think not enough people are super connected on a soul level with their purpose statement, or can even say it, right? We learn about the elevator pitch, you know, how to have your elevator pitch for your product. Well, you should have an elevator purpose statement that, you know, if someone says, well, you know, why are you on this planet, bro or sis? And you say, well, this is why, this is my statement.
Exactly. I, that really resonates with me. I talk a lot about having a compelling why, like no matter what it is, as a sort of some form of like catalyst, and also as a way to help keep oneself accountable.
Our team would like to thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. And if you're enjoying today's show, please share this episode with at least one friend or family member who will benefit from this message. And please subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Go to strongbydesignpodcast.com. That's strongbydesignpodcast.com. Let's get back to the show.
As far as these purpose statements, I don't know a lot of people that have them. Do you think that maybe people either they don't see the value in it, they don't think it is important, or they actually don't want that accountability? Because when you actually put that down on paper and you say that and you make it a part of who you are, where you're going, and again, you know, I'll say editing, revamping it every however often you need to or want to, because as we go through life, we have experiences, things change, the way we see the world changes. I would just love your opinion on that. Do you think it's maybe just laziness, not no value, no importance, or just I don't want to do that because then I don't want that kind of accountability?
I don't think it has to be any one of those. I do think a lot of people have a subconscious fear of success, because success means that you might be thrust into the limelight. It might mean you'll be given greater responsibility. It might mean that the truth hurts, meaning like if you decide that your purpose statement is to seek to attain the greatest wisdom that one can attain, you know, like King Solomon, well, with great wisdom comes great responsibility, right? Like if your wisdom, you realize that you really know what it's going to take to stop global climate change from occurring, or to truly reduce the carbon footprint of this country, then you're suddenly burdened with the responsibility to go out and do that and affect that change, right? For me to say that I want to, for example, you know, one part of my purpose statement to speak, you know, in full presence and selfless love to the glory of God. Well, that means I got to get on stage and I need to be fully present when I speak, and it needs to be for others and not for me. And I need to do it in full excellence, so I'm actually magnifying the Creator who built me. And so, yeah, it certainly raises the bar for me, right? And so for many people, even subconsciously, you know, you say, oh, that sounds great, speak, you know, get up on stage, speak to people and inspire people. But then there's that subconscious fear that's like, oh, that's also kind of scary. That's going to take a lot of work. And that means, you know, I might not be watching as many TV shows, or, you know, or spend as much time at restaurants having long dinners, because all of a sudden I've got this core honed down purpose in life that's firing me up every day. Well, yeah, there's certainly some work. There's some stress that comes along with that purpose statement. So I think that's part of it. But then I think as educators, whether as parents or as teachers, we often don't tell our children that it's important to have purpose in life. The Japanese call it ikigai, and in Italy it's called the plan de vita. And this is something that people just know in many cases, that you're supposed to have a purpose statement. You're supposed to have a reason for getting out of bed in the morning. Like my son Taryn's purpose statement is to create inspiring art that makes people laugh, right? And so if he gets up in the morning, has nothing to do, you know, I say, well, what's your purpose statement? It's creating inspiring art that makes people laugh. Well, get your sketch pad, get your pencils, get your coloring pens, and go talk to your brother who wants to create amazing stories that inspire people to go on adventures. And you guys meet heads and you make the art and he writes the story. And so, you know, if a teacher or an educator or a parent or a caretaker can teach a child how to identify their purpose in life and help that child know what they're good at, because frankly, like Taryn is really good at art and River is really good at writing. And so they're dialing in skills that, you know, they're naturally good at anyways. They enjoy pursuing those activities. And so that's part of it too, is from the ground level, you know, any cultural change or political change or anything like that, a lot of times it doesn't start at the political lobbying level. It starts at the schools. It starts with education. It starts with the parents. And so that's part of it too, is you just don't know what you don't know. Like if you were never taught to have a purpose statement in life, then then you may just never have thought about forming one. So it might be subconscious fear, knowing you should have one, but subconsciously holding back because you're afraid of the responsibility that might put on you. Mm-hmm. Some of it can be simply not knowing, like you never knew, you know, maybe until you heard this podcast, that's really important to have a purpose statement. Or maybe you do know and you're not afraid, but you don't know why. And that's another thing is you have to know how to actually hone your purpose statement. And I've kind of explained a little bit of that, right? Like what you do, like doing your kid, what comes easy to you now, what puts you in the zone. But there are also great books. There's books like Claim Your Power by Maston Kipp or The Values Factor. I forget who wrote that. Or Don't Waste Your Life by John Piper. Or, you know, even the purpose section in my book and some of the content on the online resources page associated with that chapter. I mean, like, there are ways that you can systematize the action of writing your purpose statement. I mean, like I mentioned, I just wrote a whole article on how to do that. It's called How to Find Your Purpose in Life. You just Google How to Find Your Purpose in Life, Ben Greenfield, you know, in 20 minutes, you can read how to do it. So some of it is just knowing, right? Knowing what to do. So yeah, I would say those are the top three reasons I can think for someone not really dialing in their purpose in life.
Right. So there you go, folks. You need to have your purpose statement. And you need to sit down with your kids and your family. And that was going to be my next question was, you know, clearly I was expecting that everyone in your family would have a purpose statement. Now, is it something that, you know, because your children are younger, so obviously their purpose statements are going to change throughout their lives. But while they're still home and, you know, under your teaching, you and your wife, is this something that you sit down with them and talk with them about, or is it something they just come to you and go, you know what, Dad, I got to change my purpose statement. This just isn't working for me anymore. I got to do, you know, it has to be something else.
Yeah, we talk about it. You know, we unschool our kids, so they have kind of like a free learning curriculum. And while I would love to be able to teach everything because I have the heart of a teacher and I love children, I love to teach, I also have a career and can't teach them everything, you know, math and reading and writing and social studies and all the 12 core subjects that the state of Washington requires your child to demonstrate competency in if you're going to homeschool or unschool them. But I have chosen to be the teacher of the physical disciplines, probably teach them how to exercise, breath work, sauna, cold work, you know, mobility, just how to care for their bodies, because I know that inside and out and probably wouldn't, I'd probably try to micromanage if I had somebody else be in charge of that. And then also the spiritual disciplines, right? Like leading them in gratitude, leading them in meditation, leading them in prayer, leading them in exploration of the Bible. And yeah, I've had multiple discussions with them on the importance of purpose. When I write something, I email it to them and I'm saying, Dad just wrote this. You guys should check this out. We're going to talk about this at the dinner table tonight. And sometimes it's that simple. And then, for example, you know, I have a little Google document I send to them on Sunday nights that has all their little workouts for that week, whether it's, you know, do 10 goblet squats, run down to the mailbox at the bottom of the driveway, run back up, drop and do 10 push-ups, and do that 4 times. And the very last one, breathe through your nose the whole time, right? But then on that same workout document, it will say, okay, 3 times this week, you're going to write down your purpose statement on an index card, and you're going to read aloud to yourself and decide if you want to change anything, right? So I've kind of systematized just weaving it in and working it in, and sometimes we'll just have a chat about purpose randomly, you know, come up, and I'll ask them what their purpose statement is right now. And so yeah, they're aware. I don't think there's any one perfect way to weave that into a child's life, but you know, that's what I've done. And they're, of course, certainly aware that your purpose statement can change from year to year or quarter to quarter, or, you know, from one chapter of your life opens up into another chapter of the book that is your life.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That is really, really, really awesome.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. This episode is brought to you by MetabolicStretching.net. A revolutionary flow of simple stretches that melt body fat, tone muscles, and leave you feeling full of energy in just 15 minutes. Visit metabolicstretching.net to torch stubborn body fat fast and stretch your way lean. That's metabolicstretching.net.
You mentioned breath work, so I did want to ask you about that because I think that's something that a lot of people don't truly get how important it is, like our breath and our breathing. So I'd like it because you talk a lot about it, breath work, the importance of oxygen and all of that. So can you speak on that to like why we really should be taking time and like really focusing on breath work and our breathing?
Well, breath is, it's an ancient yeah. practice that so many of us have become disconnected with. In Ayurveda, it's called prana. In Eastern medicine, it's often associated with your ki. In the Hebrew, you know, scripture or the Bible, it's, you know, the soul is often referred to as the breath. The creation of mankind in the Genesis story began with, you know, God breathing through the nostrils, the breath of life in the man after forming him from dirt. And so, you know, breath is something that's deeply interwoven into our very souls and our spirits. And most of us don't breathe correctly. We take lots of breaths in through our mouth, typically at a very high frequency per minute rate. Okay, the ideal breath frequency rate for the average day of work or emails or sitting around has actually been studied. They've studied the interplay between the two branches of the nervous system, the sympathetic fight and flight nervous system and the parasympathetic rest and digest nervous system. And when you look at the vagus nerve, which is the begins as the 10th cranial nerve and kind of snakes through the whole body and innervates a host of organs within your body, one of the things that it also innervates is the sinoatrial nodes of the heart. And so if the vagus nerve is well-toned and the nervous system is in a state of readiness for fight or flight or for rest and digest, then what happens is because the vagus nerve is innervating these pacemaker cells of the heart, there's like this mild beat-to-beat variability in between each heartbeat. That's called your heart rate variability. And a high heart rate variability indicates that your nervous system is well prepared for many things that life might throw at you. And it turns out that breath is very much connected to the vagus nerve. Not only do we know that chanting and humming and singing and yoga and all these things that involve breath work will increase the tone of the vagus nerve, thus increasing heart rate variability, but we also know that breathing in for about 5.5 seconds in and 5.5 seconds out is a perfect frequency for increasing heart rate variability. I even have a special audio track. It's called Coherent Breathing that I'll often play when I'm starting the day of emails in my office. Bells and chimes, but it's literally, you know, 5.5 in, 5.5 out. So I'm kind of subconsciously training my breath while I'm standing there working on emails and kind of starting my day, you know, just to plant that seed early in the day. And, you know, so breath frequency is one thing. The depth of the breath is important. We know that the chest has baroreceptors in it. And these baroreceptors, when triggered by shallow chest breathing, result in a release of cortisol. You know, it's a very stressful response. Not that cortisol is bad. You need it for a certain amount of yes. wakefulness and productivity. But when constantly triggered by shallow chest breathing, especially when paired with rapid shallow chest breathing, that's above that 5.5 in, 5.5 out approximate frequency, you're kind of triggering a low-level state of stress compared to breathing deep from the belly and rather than breathing from the mouth, which causes you to engage in more shallow breathing, breathing through the nose. When you breathe through the nose, it warms the air. It humidifies the air. It increases your levels of nitric oxide, which is like a, you know, form of Viagra for your whole body. It's a vasodilatory compound. It introduces a little bit more carbon dioxide into the system. And, you know, during this whole COVID mask thing at the time that we're talking, everybody's freaking out about carbon dioxide and the space and the air and the mask. But it turns out that carbon dioxide is actually quite beneficial when it builds up in the body because it's what causes oxygen to dissociate into tissue. And so when you breathe through your nose, especially when you breathe at a low frequency, a low breath rate through your nose, you're getting nitric oxide, you're getting carbon dioxide simultaneously, you're getting high levels of oxygen, you're cleaning the air with little hair particles in the nose, you're humidifying the air so you better oxygenate tissue, and the air is traveling through these little turbines in the nose that also interact again with the vagus nerve. You know, when you're breathing out through your right nostril, you're activating more of the parasympathetic nervous system. And when you're breathing out through your left nostril, you're activating more of the sympathetic nervous system. So even which nostril that you breathe out of can impact the nervous system. And there's this idea that, you know, with actual forms of breath work, like, you know, like Wim Hof style breath work, right? Where you're not doing 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 seconds out, but you might be going fully in, letting go, fully in, letting go. And, you know, after doing 2 or 3 minutes of that, you're actually blowing off a lot of CO2. And that type of what's called a hypercapnia can actually really activate the sympathetic nervous system and then create almost this inner fire within the body, which is fantastic for stimulating immunity or for preparing the body for action or for stress. Or you might look at something like long exhales. Like you might go for a walk, and for every 10 steps you're inhaling, and for every 20 steps you're exhaling. And we know that really long exhales will calm the body and put you into a more meditative state, which is why when you're laying awake in bed at night, it very much helps to do about a 4 count in and an 8 count out and a 4 count in and an 8 count out. You know, you wouldn't want to lay in bed and do something like Wim Hof breathing, because that's more sympathetic than parasympathetic. And then you've even got this idea that was made popular by Stanislav Grof, a researcher of LSD and psychedelic compounds, who realized that you can even create some of the same molecules as you might get with, you know, ingestion of LSD or other substances by simply engaging in more rapid breath work. That you know, when you blow off enough CO2, you actually stimulate this big release of DMT by the pineal gland, and you can actually do almost forms of therapy or psychedelic journeying with some of these deeper, longer forms of breath work. And so when you consider that breath, you know, there's little hacks you can buy, like, you know, masks and oxygen masks and air restriction devices. You know, you can get the biohacks, so to speak, but right, ultimately breath is pretty much free. And when you consider all the different ways we can tweak our physiology with our breath, I think it's pretty important that people develop some kind of breathwork practice, you know, learn breathwork. Again, on my website, not to keep pimping my website.
No, keep doing it.
I recently published a 5-week breathwork course that I took my children through during the pandemic. We literally went in the sauna every single night, and we did different forms of meditation and different forms of sympathetic breathwork and different forms of parasympathetic breathwork. And so, you know, that's a perfect way for people to just go and, you know, see how I taught it to my own children. If you don't know anything about breath, just, you know, just go there and do that course and use all the same audio tracks that, you know, I put in the blog post, and you'll learn that way. Or read a book. There's a great new book called Breathe by James Nestor. Now there's, you know, the Wim Hof protocol. There's a lot of different ways to kind of turn yourself into a breathwork ninja. There's some great apps out there too, like XPT has an app, and the Pranayama app. And so yeah, learning how to really develop an intimate connection with your breath and use your breath to tweak your physiology. I mean, that's a core skill I think every human should know how to do. It's like, you know, not having a relationship with your breath is kind of like having a left hand but never using it. You know, it's like, oh, I have this thing hanging off my arm. I know it's there, but I don't really pay attention to it. I don't know what it's for. I mean, maybe I should learn to use it sometime, but I'm just going to live my whole life with this thing with 5 sausages on it hanging off my left hand. I'm just going to let that be. You know, it reminds me of that when people just don't develop a relationship with their breath.
Right. And when I think of breath and breathing, these are simple, very, very impactful, let me back up, very impactful and beneficial, but free and simple practices that really anybody can start to include, incorporate practice, like find something that you can stick with, find something that works in your day, or that you know, when you start to feel the benefit of it. This is not something that people need to go out and buy like special equipment or a gym membership or be on a special diet. It's just right here, right now, you can do some sort of breathwork practice or therapy, and it's massively impactful. And I really hope, especially after listening to this podcast, people get that, because it doesn't require anything but your ability, your willingness to do it and being present.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive when you really start to do that. I mean, you'll get to the point where you can train yourself to breathe like nasally, you know, rather than huffing and puffing through your mouth at 85 to 90% exercise capacity. And it's actually it's a really great way to keep yourself focused and relaxed, even when you're charging at a very hard pace.
Awesome. Now I know I only have you for an hour, but before I finish up and because I do want you to pimp out your site, and I want you to talk about where we can all find you, all your platforms, where all your stuff is, because you got a great website. Tell them about Keon. Did I say it right?
Yeah, Keon is a supplements company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to talk about that. But before you do that, I want to know what's the typical day for you? I know you're very busy. You got a lot of things you're involved in and things you have going on, yet your health and wellness is a priority. Like it's a priority in and throughout your day. So just give us a brief rundown. What's a typical day look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, my apologies for the brevity because I am on a time crunch, but in short, I literally have I think it's like an 80 page chapter in the book on routines, but typically, it starts with breath work and a gratitude practice while laying in bed, proceeds to a couple of Ayurvedic, oral care tactics, meaning I do a little bit of tongue scraping and oil pulling as I'm kind of wandering downstairs to the kitchen where I put on some hot water for coffee or for tea. And while that's heating, I'll usually do about 10 minutes more of breath work and foam rolling and a little bit of self-inflicted massage. Typically, I'm listening to a spiritual audio or a sermon or something kind of uplifting and positive in the morning. And then I'll get my coffee or my tea, and I'll go downstairs to my office and do a little bit of red light therapy, typically, while I am reviewing articles and research and kind of avoiding emails and text messages and things like that too much, and just kind of learning early in the day. And then after I've had my coffee and my tea, I go and use the restroom. And then I'll typically do about 30 minutes of something kind of easy and restorative, like a sauna session or yoga or a walk in the sunshine, you know, something that kind of balances my body for the day and allows me to be equipped to handle stress during the day. And then I'll have a quick smoothie. You know, I have all these superfoods I'll put into a smoothie, and 9 times out of 10, it's just a smoothie. While I eat my smoothie, I'll review some emails and get ready for the day. And then once I've had my smoothie, typically until about 2 p.m., I just do deep work like a horse with blinders, podcasts, articles, book chapters, just work, 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 and, you know, rarely come up for air aside from a few stretch breaks. Then I take a break and have a salad with some nice fish or seeds or nuts or something like that on it for lunch. Usually take about a 20 to 30 minute power nap after lunch. And then I get up and I do all of my my reactive work, right? Like I check all my emails and reply to people's demands and do all that stuff in the afternoon, you know, before I've exhausted my decision-making fatigue and cognition. I like to get all the productive work done early in the day. And so I'll do all that, you know, all my kind of reactive work until about, 5 or so, another 2 or 3 hours of work. And then I'll stop there and I'll do typically a hard workout, like an interval training workout or a weight training workout. And I kind of save my hard workout for later on in the day just to, and that's really when your body's more primed from a body temperature and a hormone and a post-workout protein synthesis and a grip strength standpoint to be able to handle a harder, heavier workout. And then, after I do that workout, typically family time, we'll go play tennis or play some ping pong or work on the tree fort or, spend some time outside, play a game, whatever. And then, typically around 7:30 or so, we have a big family dinner for about an hour and play more games and sing songs and revisit our gratitude journals. And, then after dinner, I'll play the boys some music and tuck them away and put them to bed. And then, you know, head into my own bed and do some reading or maybe play a little bit more music or chat with my wife and hang out with her. And then I'm usually lights out around 10 or so and then back up around, typically around 5 the next morning to rinse, wash, and repeat. And that's
that's great. Well, it sounds busy, but it sounds really nice. It sounds like there's a nice balance in there. Especially when you start talking about the family stuff, that I love hearing that because I mean you certainly impress me with what sounds like what is, you know, what's important, you know what matters, and you make time for it. It works. You found your groove. You know, you found your flow that works, and I have a lot of respect for that. So thanks for sharing that with us. So now, you need to tell us all where we can find you. Now, before you do, though, very quickly, I do want to say to those of you listening, the website is absolutely spectacular because really anything to go to your website right from there, it's like ground zero. We can find pretty much everything and anything. But just for those listening today, hit us with all your platforms, all of your social media, everywhere.
I'm not going to do that. I'll keep it simple. I have a I have a blog, and that's where you can find most of my writings, my podcasts. That's just at bengreenfieldfitness.com. And then I also create a lot of fancy nutritional supplements and formulas and wonderful energy bars and organic coffees and all sorts of functional foods and fun stuff. And that's at getkion.com. That's K-I-O-N. And if people want 20% off over there, they can use code BGF20. Get 20% off anything at getkion.com. And then the book that we're talking about, Boundless, that's just at boundlessbook.com. So we'll keep it simple at three. BenGreenfieldFitness.com for content, getkion.com for some of the products I create, and then boundlessbook.com is where the newest book is. So.
Excellent. Well, Ben, I really honestly can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to stand and speak with me today. It was a real pleasure to get to meet you and actually talk to you in person. I've been really looking forward to it since before I got the book. So thank you very, very much. And hopefully we can get you back again someday.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. And,
cool.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe so that more people can find out about our show. Plus, you don't want to miss any future episodes with the amazing guests and topics we have lined up for you.